You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out of door.
Come over here, kid. Why so? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick.
And
you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Mouse-titters,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. Have you had a nice weekend? Have you stayed warm and dry? Or did you get wet going to the farmer's market? I went to the farmer's market today in Sebastopol. I got really wet, but I got a lot of stuff I'm going to eat this week. If I don't go to a farmer's market, it's like, oh no, what do? I always shop there and markets, when they're in season, happen rain or shine. So I figure if the farmers can get there, I can get there. It's harder for them. Anyway, supposed to not rain for a few days now. And looking at my trusty or not trusty weather widget, it's not supposed to rain next Sunday. And we don't want rain on Halloween, do we? We have a note. I should have called what I've been doing on Mouthful this fall the meat trilogy or something. There are three excellent books that have come out that deal with meat from one vantage point or another. And I've had all three authors on Mouthful, the third, tonight. And it's interesting. I was listening to a talk at the Commonwealth Club a couple of weeks ago, and my guest this evening will probably know the name of the guy, but he was talking about the post-meat world, and he was talking about how, you know, most people are not eating meat anymore, and that very soon eating meat will be like smoking, that you'll do it, but you'll feel really guilty, and fewer people. So there's that opinion, and then there's the book Good Meat by Deborah Krasner. She was here, I think, just about a month ago, and it's a complete guide to sourcing and cooking sustainable meat. Then CAFO, Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation, The Tragedy of Industrial Animal Factories, and by Dan Imhoff. It's just an amazing, amazing book, informative and enlightening and thought-provoking in so many ways. And then from my friend, colleague, and just all-around really cool woman, Marisa Gugiana has just come out with Primal Cuts, Cooking with America's Best Butchers. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I feel like I knew you the whole time you were pregnant, you know? Because you did talk about the book a couple of times on Mouthful.
Yeah.
And you've been
finally
here.
Gave birth.
You've been on the show talking about Sonoma Direct, your president,
mm-hmm.
The Sonoma Meat Buying Club, mm-hmm. your own little salad CSA, which you had for a while. And I think there was one other time when you were on with your dad.
Yeah.
So I've heard about this, and it's just great to see it. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us how you went about it? Because I think it's a fascinating story.
Well, the publisher actually came to me. They wanted to make a meat book, and since I'm a deeply specific person who writes about meat and is obsessed with meat, I guess, at this point I can say that. My friend who made a book with them last year, Douglas Gayton, said, I know the gal you need to talk to. So we started talking about the book, and then that was last summer. And so it was a very
Summer 09?
Yeah.
You did it really fast.
It was a speedy process. But I basically left Sonoma Direct in my dad's hands and hit the road. I drove about 11,000 miles. There are several people from California in the book, but there's people from all over. And I rented a Prius and I just drove and drove and stayed with butchers.
So did you do all the driving rather than flying?
I flew a couple times. I flew to New Orleans and I flew to Texas. But other than that, I drove to New York. I flew to New York and then I just sort of crisscrossed the country from there and then came home. And there was a lot of places I'd never seen before. So just on a personal level, that was a real joy to see all these little nooks and crannies of the country that were new to me. And then I would just meet with people. I had investigated very deeply beforehand where I wanted to go and who I wanted to visit, and I was on a tight schedule, but I would take their picture. There's portraits of all the butchers in the book, and then hang out with them for varying lengths of time. Some people, you know, I spent a couple hours with, and some people I spent several days with. And
Just, I got to ask you a question
yeah.
about the photographs.
Okay.
Because they're so good.
Oh, thank you.
What sort of camera? What were you
I used a Canon Rebel, and I just used the kit lens, and there's a big learning curve in there, and hopefully it's not as apparent to everyone else as it is to me. But.
No, the photographs are wonderful.
Thank you. I mean, that was really fun to learn, you know, how to, I think the hardest thing is making other people feel comfortable, because everyone gets a little nervous when they're having their photo taken. Yeah. And I was nervous about it at first. So then we would just work each other up in this sort of subtle, unspoken way. And by the end of the book, I felt good about it, and I sort of knew how to make people feel good. And so I can see that in the photos, but it was really fun to do that.
Mm-hmm. So it's portraits of, is it 50?
Mm-hmm.
50 butchers throughout the country.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a pair of butchers.
Yeah, sometimes it's a team. And then I introduce them and just sort of my experience of them and sort of place them in the diaspora of butchers. And then the rest of it is their story and their words that I've edited from, you know, sometimes, like I said, days of conversation and sometimes, you know.
Did you record or did you take notes?
I recorded. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not a very good note taker. Uh-huh.
Yeah, recording, it's so easy to record now.
Yeah.
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 And did you have to transcribe it all yourself too?
At first I did, but then as the pace of my trip picked up, my publisher took pity on me and hired a transcriber, which was like,
oh, how wonderful.
Heavenly.
God, that is great.
I hate typing, yeah.
Oh, that's really good for them.
Yeah,
Welcome Books is the publisher. And they just soared in my opinion.
Amazing. Yeah,
that's
so
really
good.
Great. Well, I think the average person who's just, you know, trying to get dinner on the table.
Yeah.
Oh, butcher, they cut up the meat and put it in the place where I grab stuff.
Right.
What does a butcher really do? What's the scope?
Well, what I was hoping to express is that a lot of people that we think of as butchers, a guy standing behind the counter at Safeway, if there is anyone standing behind the counter at Safeway anymore, is really a meat cutter who gets a box of meat that's been cut up in a factory in the middle of the country probably, and they might put it into what we call retail cuts, like take it from a loin into chops or steaks. They might not even do that. They might get the stuff already done. But really, a butcher gets whole animals and then, you know, divides them up into all the different parts. And the thing that's great and important and really valuable about that is that if we're going to buy meat from farms, someone has to buy a whole carcass, because farmers cannot sell parts. They don't have the infrastructure to do that. So the butchers become this incredibly important link in a local food system. And so I just really want to support the work that they're doing and let people know, you should buy from these people who are working with local farms, because they're taking a great onus on themselves to spend all that time and they have all that knowledge, and it's expensive for them to do that. They're taking on the financial responsibility of having this whole animal and having to get rid of all the parts. You know, of course they can sell boneless, skinless chicken breasts and filet mignon, but they're taking on the responsibility of saying, okay, I'm also going to get rid of this whole check and I'm going to make money at it. And that's hard to do.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you discovered people doing to survive doing just this?
Well, they're getting very entrepreneurial and creative out there, which is really cool. There's a place in Georgia that I profiled called Farm 255. They're in Athens. And they actually they raise the animals. They have them slaughtered, and then they have a restaurant. And they opened a couple hamburger restaurants in Atlanta because they wanted to move through a great quantity of all this ground beef that they had left over from the restaurant. And, you know, half of a cow is going to end up as ground meat. So that's a lot. That's, you know, sometimes 500 pounds of meat from one animal. So now they have this really booming grass-fed burger business in Atlanta, and it's completely stabilized the infrastructure for them, which is really cool. People make charcuterie. You know, a quarter of the weight of a pig is the leg, and we don't cook the leg that much. You can make cutlets from it, but most people buy the loin or the butt for stew, or the belly for bacon. Mm-hmm. But the legs, they're sort of lost in our industrial food system. They end up as hams or whatever. But people are making prosciutto, and, you know, restaurants all over now are having charcuterie plates. And
yeah,
that's
just say that, house-made charcuterie. And
yeah.
One thing I've noticed recently, just at our local farmers markets, pretty much everyone who's selling meat is having sausage made, and maybe a little bit of bacon.
Yeah.
I know Gleason Ranch, Owen Family Farm, Brock from
Black Sheep.
Mm-hmm. He has sausages now.
Yeah.
So they're that's just a way to use more of the animal.
Yeah, you get to use the fat and the trim, and if you can't get rid of the leg is lean, but if you use the back fat, you can work it out and make a delicious sausage. So that's a really important skill of being able to make things or teach people how to make things at home from that stuff.
Yeah. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be right back with more talk about Primal Cuts.
Hey, everybody, did the news get around about a guy named Butcher Pete? He's a hacking and whacking and spacking. He's a hacking and whacking and spacking. He's a hacking and whacking and spacking. He just hacks, whacks, chopping that meat. Butcher Pete got a long, sharp knife. Starts hacking on a wheel stop. Oh, you better watch your mind, cause Pete don't care who meat he's chopping. He's a hacking and whacking and spacking. He's a hacking and whacking and spacking. He's a hacking and whacking and spacking.
He's
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. My guest this evening, Marisa Gugiana. When I first opened the show and I was talking about that lecture that I heard, it was Jonathan Safran Foer, right? Yeah, Foer. And the book is called Eating Animals. And it's sort of the opposite of everything that we're talking about.
In some ways. Actually, he gets sort of pegged as being this like militant vegetarian, but that's kind of simplifying his view, which is that if the only meat that is available to us is meat like what Dan Imhoff is talking about mm-hmm. in CAFO, then it's really morally wrong to eat that meat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
and I think
this book is my dream for a world where we don't eat that meat. So.
Yeah, and I can certainly go along with that. I think part of his reputation must come from how he presents himself.
Yeah, yeah. He's an East Coast intellectual, too, uh-huh. who decided to write a book about meat and from his personal experience. And I think a lot of people in the meat world are kind of like, oh, okay, Johnny come lately with your opinions. You know, all right.
So back to Primal Cuts. And I do absolutely love this book. Mm-hmm. And we have a local guy, which we will talk about shortly. But first, two people caught my eye right away, partly because they're just so adorable. Erica Nakamura and Amelia Posada.
Yeah.
And you were just down over the weekend seeing them, right, in Los Angeles?
I went down. Their shop's opening in December on Fairfax, but I did an event with them called Artisanal LA, which was a food show of artisanal small food producers, and very LA, like very elegant. Everyone is wearing Labutan shoes and very not Sonoma County. But they broke down a half a pig, and I emceed.
Oh, that's when I saw you posted on Facebook that you were emceeing the breakdown of a pig.
Yeah, it was like, da-da-da-da-da. I talked for 40 minutes about pigs, which I didn't know till yesterday I could do, but I can.
if I remember correctly from reading this, Erica or Amelia, one of them was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Before
Amelia.
She became a butcher.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
They actually did a mentorship at Fleischer's, which is another butcher in the book. It's in the Hudson Valley. And Erica decided that she wanted to be a butcher, and they just got married this last fall. So Amelia came with her and just, you know, it slowly started poking her head in and kind of like, you know, just hanging out after work and just sort of gained a comfortability with it. And then they wanted to make a business together and share that in their life. So she became a butcher, and, you know, she feels like, you know, we were just saying about Jonathan Safran before, like, okay, I can eat this meat. Like this is, you know, morally righteous or at least ambiguous enough that I can feel good about it. And, so they're opening their shop in LA, and they're going to buy only whole animals, and, they're accepting food stamps, which I think is really
cool.
Oh,
that's great. That's great.
And, I think they're going to be doing a really good thing down there.
And then you went to their wedding.
I went to their wedding.
And
I brought beef
the
to their wedding. I drove down in my Scion with ice packed, like half of a cow, and
big wedding.
Yeah, it was a beautiful wedding. There was an accordionist. It was great. We had a really fun time.
Every wedding should have an accordion player.
Agreed.
It's the only thing missing from my daughter's wedding. And I thought I had them lined up, and right at the end, they couldn't make. I was going to have a portion of the Hubbub Club, you know, a little portion of them, and at the last minute, they couldn't make it.
Aw, bummer.
But we had everything else. How did you go about finding? How did you, you know, start locating the ones you wanted to write about?
Well, a lot of people I knew. I mean, it's actually a pretty rare thing for butchers to buy whole animals.
Oh, yeah.
So most of them are pretty good self-marketers, and they're sort of known. If they weren't already known to me through just a lot of slow food work and writing for meat paper, then they were known in their community. So I reached out to slow food groups, edible magazines. Andrew Zimmern, who has a show called Bizarre Food, he really knows the Midwest, which is very unknown to me as a coastal kind of girl. So he pointed me in the direction of some really fantastic people that ended up in the book. And I just asked people that I thought were really smart and connected and got what I meant. And then I, you know, would have exploratory conversations with them. And sometimes I was like, yeah, no, you're not really where it's at for me. But it wasn't hard, and I could write another book with 50 more people.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that might be it. It might just be 100, but there's definitely more people out there.
The book also, we should say, has recipes.
Yes, there's each of the butchers submitted recipes, and I made sure that all the different primal cuts or main sections of each animal are covered, and all the cooking styles are covered. Mm-hmm. So I hope that even if you don't make a recipe exactly, which is never how I make a recipe, then it teaches you some kind of cooking style, or at least informs you how you would cook that cut. Mm-hmm. And then you can do your own thing with it. But, I mean, the recipes are also really fantastic. Yeah. As they are.
And one thing you have, I was really happy to see, you have several recipes for goat.
Yes.
And I know it was a few years ago that Bill Nyman got back into ranching.
Yeah.
And was saying, you know, goat's going to be the next meat.
Yeah.
And it hasn't quite materialized all the way yet, I think, because people don't really know how to cook it.
Yeah, and it has a very strong flavor, and the American palate seems pretty averse to it, but it is the most popular meat in the world, and I think Bill gave up on it as a enterprise.
Oh, he did? He's given up on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, then he moved on to turkeys, and I'm not sure what he's at where he's at now, but yeah, I hope more people will eat lamb and goat because they're so much gentler on the earth than cows and pigs, and they're almost always raised in a way that we could all feel good about. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good to eat smaller animals when you can.
One thing I didn't realize until recently is that lamb is pretty regional.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter lives in Mississippi, and she loves lamb, and she can't get it.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, the Northeast, there's pockets, Northern California and through the Central Valley, and then Colorado, and then the Northwest. It's kind of in little stripes.
And that's sort of it.
Yeah, and that's it.
I was really, that really surprised me.
Yeah, a lot of it is grown in Colorado, and then in Dixon, Superior Farms, they provide a lot of lamb, and then Rosen in Colorado. It's also pretty centralized, like all the meat industry.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about goat. You have one recipe here that sounds really good. Mm. Goat gratin.
Yeah.
Goat gratin.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
It's a really rich dish, and you have to be sure that you're a goat person before you, like, I don't want anyone to shy away from it, but I would be like fully committed to the flavor of goat before you go there. It has goat cheese.
Maybe
in
not
it.
The place to start.
Yeah.
If
it's
you've
not,
never had goat.
No, it's advanced. It's not introductory. And, it's from Marcia McBride at Cafe Rouge in Berkeley. And she, she's had a meat counter in her restaurant for a really long time and has been supporting local farms for 15 years. And so they also make really exquisite charcuterie.
Cafe Rouge is a great place.
It's a great spot. And so it's, you know, it has cream and then it's covered in a goat cheese and it's just like really rich and definitely like a wintry kind of dish. You could eat it in the summer too, I guess, with a little salad. But
yeah, I was going to say you probably want a nice big salad.
Yeah,
glass alongside. That sounds good. You also have on, I just can't not talk about this one. On the opposite page, you have a Mexican red pozole.
Yeah, that's a yummy dish.
And pozole, of course,
Marcia, too, yeah.
Yeah, that's from Marcia. And pozole, of course, I think of pozole as an October dish.
Yeah.
It's something you have to eat on Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. It's a very festive dish. It's a dish that you bring a lot of people together to eat, which is nice.
And for those of you who don't know, pozole is usually made with pork.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's best with pork. I've
yeah.
seen a couple with chicken. That chicken doesn't hold up well
yeah,
to
fast.
Yeah, and it develops, I think, an unpleasant flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But pork, you can cook pork a really long time and
yeah.
it's great. And this one is a red one. And of course the other main ingredient is hominy or also called pozole. So I'm going to have actually several pozole recipes on my blog, Eat This Now, this week, so that you can take your pick.
Oh, cool.
And if you have this posted anywhere, I'll link to it.
Okay. Yeah. It's
Let's talk about Ari Rosen. Ari Rosen, homeboy from the wonderful Scopa
yeah.
up in Healdsburg. And one thing I know, I don't know if it's in the story, I can't remember. He and his wife got married, Donna Lise, just two such lovely people. They got married up in Westport.
Mm.
And they had someone in Dry Creek Valley raise several lambs for them. And then they used the lamb skin. The skin, the lamb skin.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they actually wore them around their shoulders or something, or Ari did. And then they gave one or two to their parents.
Oh, wow.
They just incorporated it. They made this whole ritual out of it, and I just loved that.
Yeah.
So tell us about Ari. I know he will break down an entire animal in his restaurant.
Oh, yeah, and he has a very small kitchen. So it's like when you see that, and it's him, and he just got one other guy. So it's like if he can do it, it can be done. But Ari's story was so charming to me, actually. I didn't know his history before Sonoma County, and he actually decided he was in college and he was running a sleep lab. He wanted to be like a behavioral scientist.
I didn't know this about him.
Yeah, and he decided he was getting into cooking, and his sister was living in Italy, and she said, come hang out and cook. So he left school, went to Italy, didn't speak Italian, had never worked in a kitchen, had no training, and he started working in an Italian kitchen. So he's learning all the, you know, names of tools and the techniques and the ingredients and everything in a language that he doesn't know, in a super intense Italian kitchen. And he just worked it out, figured it out. Ended up working for some really well-respected chefs in Italy, and opened a restaurant in Italy with these three guys. And they sourced everything, and they were in the restaurant all day long. And so I just thought that was really brave and cool. And then he came back to California, and he worked at Dry Creek Kitchen, and he worked at
Santi.
Yeah. And then he opened his little dream spot at Scopa, which is just like really has that Italian feel of just everything just feels so cared for. And
yeah, it's a sweet little place. I love that place. I wish it was in Sebastopol.
Yeah.
People in Hillsburg don't, I'm sure. So the recipe from Ari is porchetta.
Yeah, which is like Italian street food.
Talk about it. I think a lot of people don't know what porchetta is.
It's, it can kind of mean different thing. It could be the whole pig with the skin on, rolled, and then really slow roasted on a rotisserie. And then sometimes it's just the loin with the belly wrapped around it. But it's just letting that fat from the skin and the back fat and the belly seep into the leaner loin meat over time. And then, it gets pulled off in these like fatty, juicy, delicious chunks and put into, you know, sandwiches or served as. And it's fantastic. It's a great, like pozole, it's a really great dish for a big festival or party.
Yeah, it's so, I love it. It's so good. Speaking about pork and pigs, you hear a lot, especially, I mean, I think Julia Child really talked about this a lot. The leaning of American pigs.
Yeah. Yeah, they, you know, over the last, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, they decided to make pork much leaner. And so it's become this really dry meat, the other white meat campaign. And it's funny, pork is the only meat, I learned this from CAFO, that we actually eat less of now than we did 50 years ago. And I think it might be because it's not as delicious anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a term, PSE, which means pale, soft, and exudative. And that's kind of
pale, soft, and
exudative. And that means that it's like gray and it's, you know, it's like leaking this sort of watery substance. And that happens to a lot of pork because it's so malnourished and it's so lean, and they get so large, but they don't have enough fat on them. And they're pumped full of all these horrible antibiotics, and they have terrible feed and all this stuff. So the meat is actually like, I mean,
it's awful.
It's gross. It's disgusting. And
You can't make a good pork chop from it. It's impossible.
No, it's just dry, and it gets that weird, like flaky thing. But when it comes to chicken or pork, it's not very hard to convince people to buy a local sustainably raised meat, I think, because once they eat it, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It has so much flavor. It's got fat. Like you can't really screw it up. If you put like a locally raised chicken or pig, you know, you put it in the oven, it's just going to turn out great because it's, you know, it's just got so much to it and so much fat.
Yeah. It's so easy with those foods. If you're not convinced, to do side by side tests.
Yeah.
There's no comparison. Once you eat real local chicken. It's like an egg. Sometimes if people are really resistant, start them with eggs. Get an egg for, $1.79 a dozen egg. And just make a little omelet and then do the other one next to it. And there's just no, you can never eat bad eggs again.
Yep. So true.
So that's right. When it comes to butchers, you just mentioned chicken. I don't know if we necessarily think about chicken.
Yeah. I mean, some butchers don't. Like the old school butchers are kind of like, chicken. I won't do chicken. That's like an insult, you know? But it's great to know how to butcher a chicken just in your own kitchen. There's instructions in the book on how to do it. It's not hard. It's pretty intuitive, actually. But, if you're grilling it or even if you want to do like a brick chicken, and it's nice to be able to get all the pieces flattened out and so they'll cook evenly.
And even if you, I learned this, my dear sweet niece, when she had her second baby, one of the things I did was cook for them for a couple of weeks. And, I cooked a whole turkey. At one point, I cooked a whole chicken.
Yeah.
And she had never dealt with a whole chicken before.
Really?
Yeah. And she is a real smart woman.
Yeah.
And she said, what do I do? And it didn't occur to me that I either should have broken it down after I roasted it, or at least taught them.
Yeah.
And that was her. And I mean, Northern California, smart parents, that sort of thing. She had no idea. And it made me realize that, it's another thing. We have a generation, at least, of people growing up who don't know how to handle these things once they have them at home.
Yeah. It's very intimidating to people. And it's amazing to me how, yesterday doing that pig butchery, was like, there was like over 100 people just riveted, and I guess I've seen it all the time at work, so it's not like as fascinating to me, but people have never seen that before. Yeah. They've never seen it in its whole form, and they just had so many questions, and they were just transfixed. I mean, it was like they were, watching TV or something. They were just like silent and just totally focused.
That's great. We're going to take another musical break, and we'll be right back. Yep, too much pork for just one fork. That's a lot of pig. I'm talking with Marisa Gugiana. The book just published, Primal Cuts, Cooking with America's Best Butchers. It is from Welcome Books, and you are in the midst of a book tour. Bravo, Welcome Books, supporting a book tour. Where else are you going?
I'm headed down to San Diego next weekend. I'm doing a lot of events in the Bay Area. And then I'm going to go to New York and Boston and Seattle and Portland.
God, that's great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That's really, really, really fun. Let's talk a little bit more about the whole animals and what is required. Because you see things like aged, dry aged. Mm-hmm. So what gets aged? What doesn't? What's the difference between dry aged and this horrible wet vacuum pack?
Wet aged. Well, beef is really the only thing that benefits from a great deal of aging. Mm-hmm. I mean, every animal sits a little bit just to let, the rigor mortis sort of settle. And there's a chemical process that needs to happen before it gets edible. For a chicken, it's a day, But
And what about a lamb? And what is that process other than, rigor mortis ending? What else has to happen?
Well, there's a chemical breakdown that just lets the muscles relax enough that they're edible. And there's also, for lamb, it's like a week, I think. I mean, you could eat it after a couple of days, but I think lamb and goat, it's nice to let them sit for a week. Pork, you can eat after a day or so. Beef, there's a... there's a benefit to the flavor and the texture by letting it age. And mostly what gets aged is the loin, which ends up being like the very expensive steaks. Mm-hmm. And that adds to their expense because you lose a lot of water leaves, yeah. which concentrates the flavor. So that makes them more expensive because whoever's selling them is going to have less weight to sell at the end of the day. And I think around 21 days is sort of the premium, you know, that starts to get like sort of a nice, like a dry aged beef. Mm-hmm. Usually probably they're aged a couple weeks, and then some people get very extreme with it and age it for a lot longer and, you know, end up like scraping off a large quantity of like mold and that gets a very intense flavor, and that's not mm-hmm. for everybody, but it's great, you know, and mm-hmm. it gets very tender.
Mm-hmm. Very tender. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between, and I think this is where people who don't know much about this have questions, the difference between aging and just going bad.
Right, right.
You know, because, I mean, if you end up with some meat in the back of your refrigerator and you forget to open the package,
yeah.
you know, in 8 or 9 days
right.
or even less, it's yeah. going to be like, ooh.
Disgusting.
Give it to the vultures.
Yeah. Well, most of my favorite things are sort of a process of foods that are rotting, I think. I mean, alcohol, cheese, great meat. But they're aged, and dry aging is, you know, it's in a controlled environment. Mm-hmm. There's not bacteria.
Low temperature.
Low temperature, yeah. It's not freezing, but there's a lot of airflow. That's important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just, you watch out for bad bacteria. If it's in your fridge, who knows what is in there. And then wet aging is this term that was created by the industrial meat system to you know, create some sort of premium for them putting something in a vacuum bag that they haven't sold yet and then just letting it sit there.
And there's nothing to recommend it.
There's not, you know, I mean, some people think that it does just a fine job as anything else as dry aging, but I think those people are wrong. I think it's gross. And if anything comes out of a cryovac bag, I always clean it. I always rinse it off in the sink and then pat it dry because I think it gets a sort of plasticky flavor. Yeah,
I agree with you on what I do. And actually, I think it might have been something by Mark Bittman where I read this. Take it out, rinse it off, dry, set it on a ceramic plate in your refrigerator for 4 or 5 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think
you should have a clean refrigerator, but again, you lose moisture.
Yeah.
It becomes more tender and the flavors concentrate. And I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
And it's quite good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, other liquids get in the bag sometimes. They're trying to add weight to things. And, you know, so, I mean, some meat gets pumped full of salt water and other things to, it's not, they're not supposed to do that. It's legal, but it happens.
They do it. Yeah. How do you, is there any surefire way to tell?
You know, I just try not to eat industrial meat anymore because I just don't trust it. And I've had a few, I try not to be a snob about this stuff. I mean, I know not everyone can afford to buy really expensive meat. I think the answer to that is just eat way less meat. Mm-hmm. But I've had a couple experiences lately where I've eaten meat that I'm like, this is disgusting. Like ground poultry is, you know, if it's coming from I had a turkey burger recently that was from like, I don't remember what the brand name was, but it was from a big box store and it tasted like poison to me. I mean, it tasted like a chemical disinfectant. And then I learned from CAFO again that it probably did have a chemical disinfectant. Like they're scraping that ground meat from all these machines and it's just like the detritus of the processing procedure. And it's just whatever's left at the end of the day in these huge machines from all these different chickens. And then they actually use a disinfectant to clean it because it's so ripe for bacterial infection. Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Yeah. Oh, it's one. I mean, one place to start if you want to start making that shift in the sort of meat you eat. I think the first obvious thing to do is don't buy at big box stores.
Yeah.
Just stop that.
Yeah.
Shop locally, and then very slowly, you know, get more and more, or as you know, as quickly as you can. Mm-hmm. But like one thing I tell people, and I don't mind mentioning brand names, don't buy Tyson chicken.
Yeah.
We have enough chicken produced here in Northern California that you can find a local brand. And a lot of things, Rocky has been on sale lately.
Yeah.
If you can't afford Gleason, which right now has been some of my favorite chicken, I think they
amazing
do.
Chicken.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's so
you
good.
Know, I can't live without their thighs. They're so good. But when I can't get them and I can't get another one, Rocky is local. Yeah. Fulton Farms.
Yeah.
Is still relatively local.
Yeah.
So you can start that, and then as you get used to it, and you have to learn some different cooking techniques, mm-hmm. and when you just start seeing how much better it is, mm-hmm. and you sort of adjust. But first thing, like, whenever you hear about, what is it, E. coli, you know, a recall of 1 billion pounds of hamburger or something, it's like, why would you buy a box of hamburger patties from Costco or something? I have no idea why.
I mean, that meat was probably irradiated. They send truckfuls of meat through radiation to kill bacteria. Yeah. I mean, those kinds of things make me think, something's not right here. This isn't working. Like that's a panic mode response to an overgrown food system. But it's true. I mean, if you're going to start buying from farmers markets or buying whole animals directly from farms, which is sort of the ultimate goal, I would say, mm-hmm. in my worldview, then, you do have to get kind of flexible about what you're going to cook. You're not going to get the boneless, skinless chicken breast every single night. You're going to have to say like, oh, I've got a lamb neck in my freezer. You know, I'm going to have to get creative and learn how to cook this. And, you know, that's for some people, that's a bigger adjustment than for others.
Yeah, it is. But there's so many rewards.
Yeah, it's so fun. And I think, I personally think that a lot of this focus on getting back to local and do-it-yourself stuff is just people reconnecting with the fact that the chores of our daily life are often the joys of our daily life.
And now that's so well put. That is so perfectly put.
I think that to find, you know, to get into the details of cooking dinner and to connect with people about it and to have some community around it, it doesn't have to be your entire lifestyle, but going to the farmer's market once a week and having like a little story to share with, you know, in all your meals throughout the week, like that's really beautiful instead of rushing through all that stuff. I mean, that's really the details of life that are so enriching.
Yeah. And you go to the grocery store, especially if you go to a supermarket, you know, not a locally owned store.
Yeah.
You're often usually waited on by a checker, mm-hmm. who doesn't even make eye contact with you.
Yeah.
And I just find that so alienating.
Yeah.
But then you can go, like today when I went to the farmer's market, everyone was so glad to see me, not because I'm me. They were so glad to see any customers who were willing to come out in the pounding rain.
Yeah.
Just thought, if they're going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And we got hugs, you know. It's like, here, have another, you know, onion. We're so happy someone came out.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what else do we do with our time? Sit in front of, watch bad television?
Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of it a lot. You know, you rush, and then I realize, oh my God, I just did all this rushing so I could just sit, and what am I going to do? Or work more? It's like, just let dinner take all night. That's so fun, you know?
And I'm starting to spend Sundays cooking and do, like today. Preparing for the week. And partly, I go to the farmer's market on Sunday and I come home and I have all this stuff. It's like, well, why not sort it out and do some things now?
Yeah.
And while I was doing that, I also, I made several dishes. But I also cleaned out my spice cabinet while I was doing it. And it was just it was really pleasant.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed the whole day so much.
Yeah.
And with listening to the rain and everything was great.
Yeah. I know some people think that sounds really dilettantish to like, oh, I don't have time for that. You know, you obviously have nothing to do or whatever. But I just, you know, the more effort you put into it, the less money you have to spend, I think. Mm. And, you know, it becomes its own reward. But
it does. And, you know, we all have to eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, one little thing that happens when you cook like that, you don't have so many cardboard boxes and packages to either throw out or recycle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a whole different food system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we're headed there.
Yeah, I hope so. And when you buy, you know, the version of vegetables that you get at the farmer's market and you buy the meat that's still on the bone and all that stuff, then you can make stock and, you know, you get all these other little benefits that that save you money and that are so wonderful to just have lying around in your freezer.
Yeah, you can make stock. I mean, I've always thought if you take one weekend four times a year and make stocks. The actual hands-on time isn't very much.
Yeah.
And then you just pack them in freezer bags and label them, and you can make risotto, soup, stews at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And I just love that. Well, here's a roasted lamb. You mentioned lamb necks a few minutes ago. Roasted lamb necks. Tell us about, this is from Chris Cosentino at Encanto and Boccoloni.
Yeah, he's in San Francisco and is also a TV celebrity. He has a show on the Food Network.
I'm so illiterate about I can't watch the Food Network.
he's great. I mean, he's kind of put himself out there as like the offal guy. Like he a lot of the food at Encanto has organ meat in it or is sort of pretty out there, but he's a fantastic chef, and the lamb necks are actually have a lot of meat on them, and they're delicious, just slow roasted. And you know, the neck is really nutritious. It's got all this great collagen gelatin.
Yeah,
in
it's
it.
Really good for you.
And it's a great fall dish, actually.
Oh, and I see he also did a grilled beef heart dish.
Yeah.
Grilled beef hearts, does he do? Oh, I have to look at this real quick. Oh, he does horseradish vinaigrette. Mm. This is something you can get. Is it Brazil? We get it on the streets. Skewers of
Brazilian.
Roasted beef heart that have been marinated in vinegar.
Yeah.
Really good. Really,
I love
really good.
Beef heart. I mean, this is, I think if you're going to eat organ meat, then it's really important to buy meat that you trust, because all those things are filters for all of the toxins in the body. And I would not eat a liver, a kidney, or heart from something that was raised in, you know, a big industrial farm.
I completely agree with you. What surprised you as you were working on this book? I still find it amazing that you did so much of the driving. It's just great. What surprised you most? Is that a fair question? Is there any things that really stand out that either like sent you off in a different direction or were just sort of resonate as really surprising?
Well, I was surprised by how in the beginning I was like begging my publisher to just let me do the whole book in the Bay Area, because I felt like, God, I'm leaving out all these people here that are doing such great stuff. And I know the Bay Area, so it was easier for me to find them people that were a little bit off the beaten path. But I was surprised by, I hope I don't sound like a West Coast food snob, but that, there's so much great stuff happening all over the country. Yeah. And certainly the Bay Area is like a food lab for sustainability. And we've been working on these things for and thinking about ingredient-driven food for a long time here. But there's just so many pockets all over the country where people are creating local food systems and they're just working it out. And a lot of times they're reinventing the wheel. And I'm like, oh gosh, I can see that you're going to be amazing in 2 years.
Yeah.
But right now you're not making any money and you're working so hard, you know, but it's amazing. Like there's this crazy meme happening where everyone is just like coming to these realizations together. And, so that was really surprising to me. Uh-huh. It was great.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this same, I mean, we're all being affected by a lot of the same things. Mm-hmm. One of them being things like a billion eggs recalled, you know, people dying from eating a hamburger, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's throughout the country. And that's there has to be at least a percentage of people who then think, oh, there's a different way to do it.
Yeah.
So that part, it makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, farmers aren't making money and, people in grocery stores aren't making money. I mean, being a butcher used to be a really good gig. And there's a couple guys in the book. One of them is a butcher from my business, Sonoma Direct, but who've been doing it a long time, you know. And back in the 60s and 70s, like, they were making good money.
Yeah,
they would travel
around. I remember
that. Like, it, you know, it was a good, it was a good job, well-respected. There was unions. Now they're not making any money. So I think part of it is this desire to create a food system that where everyone along the way is benefited, you know, not just spiritually, but financially.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important. You can only do something so long if you're not going to make a living out of it. Tell us about the Butcher's Guild.
Well, my friend Tia Harrison, who's one of the butchers in the book, she has a really fantastic shop with two partners in Bernal Heights in San Francisco called Avedano's. And she and I have started a National Butcher's Guild. It's very new. But traveling around, I just realized that there was a need for community. And like I said, some people are recreating the wheel. It's like, there's this person over here has already done what you're doing, and I want to connect you to. And and create some community and let you learn from each other. And then beyond that, I want to let consumers know on a national level that there's a real benefit to buying from butchers who support local farms. And so it'll be, you know, something that will carry through to the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully help butchers to educate themselves, continue their education. A lot of these guys, because there's not really any kind of mentoring program
anymore.
There's no apprenticeship anymore, really. I mean, there's little schools popping up, but they're very new. And a lot of the guys who are teaching the schools have only been butchering for 6 years or something, you know. So we want to help to just further their education. Not that I want to open a school, but just to, you know, send people to a butcher shop in some other part of the country where they can really learn their chop, so to speak. And, you know, different programs like that help get stories out into the news about meat and interesting things that are happening and connect, like, really, you know, really great food writers with really great outlets and stuff like that.
Cool. You're such a firecracker. You know, you are so great. You do so many things. And before we wrap up this hour, just real quickly, as the book was in the final stages of production, you went away.
I went
to an artist colony to work on, you know, you graduated with what?
A degree in creative writing. As a playwriting focused. And I went away to work on a screenplay. The funny thing is that I thought, oh, I'm going to go away to the Hudson Valley and I'm not going to think about meat for like a month. It's going to be amazing. And I got there and two of the artists that were there were working on projects around animal slaughter. They were doing fine art projects, but that involved like getting whole animals and going through the process of killing them and recording that and just exploring the moral quandaries of that. And I was like, oh my God. There's no escape. It comes to me. And so we were buying lambs and slaughtering them and having lamb roasts.
Really?
And yeah. It was great.
And you're like, wow. At an artist colony, I never would have guessed.
Yeah. It's sad.
And what about the play? Can you say anything about it? Or the screenplay?
Yeah, it's the life story of a Russian biologist that lived at the turn of the century named Nikolai Vavilov, and it's in development.
Cool.
Yeah.
One thing that you just said made me think of something I saw today, either in the paper or online, maybe on CNN.com. Yes, I do check it now and then. A Dutch artist who, I don't know if you've heard about this, the one who got a pig or followed a pig to see all the different things that were done with this pig.
Ah.
And it was 184 different products.
Oh my God.
That parts of this pig went into.
Oh wow.
Some we know about, like bacon.
Yeah.
But then all these industrial products that we would know nothing about. I'll send you the link. It was really, really interesting.
I think I heard about it. They made a book about it. Did he make a book about it?
It's a woman.
Oh.
It was just, I just read real quickly. I didn't see anything about a book, but I didn't read the whole article. I just read and thought, okay, well, that's really interesting.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
So in our last couple of minutes, the book is available pretty much all over.
Yeah. It's at Williams-Sonoma stores. It's on Amazon. And then it's at all the major booksellers and in Copperfields.
Yeah. And probably it's at Reader's Books in Town of Sonoma, which is just a great bookstore.
I haven't been there.
Oh, you have to check it out. Lila.
Okay.
Lila and Andy, they're just one of the best bookstores in the world.
I'll check it out.
And I'm sure down at Book Passage in Corte Madera as well. And for people who have said, okay, I'm going to start. Right now, I'm going to start eating better meat.
Yeah.
For people in Sonoma County.
Yes.
Where should we send them other than farmers markets? Always great.
Right.
Where else?
There's a lot of meat CSAs. Gleason Ranch has one. There's one called Sneaky Meats that.
Yeah, I just heard about them.
Ryan at Willowside. He runs that. And Willowside Meats has some great local meats.
Oliver's has started their Hicks Valley meat program with a rancher in Petaluma.
Yep. Oliver's has some great products. Big John's in Healdsburg has some great local stuff. And where else. And you can always call Sonoma Direct, and we're wholesale, but we like to hook people up if they're in the mood.
Yeah, and you can find them just by going to SonomaDirect.com. Yep. I do it on a regular basis. On that note, Marisa, really, congratulations. It's a fabulous book.
Thanks,
and
Michelle.
I'm so excited you're going to start working on another one.
Yeah.
Really soon.
Yep.
That's just great. Thanks. Okay, meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Actually, I won't be here. It's Halloween. I don't work on my national holiday. It's also Mouthful's 15th anniversary, so we'll probably have something special for you. Have a great week. Be good to yourself and be good to your animals.
Got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher